Nagpur. So I arrived in Nagpur in the morning. I remember this very well. And rather to my astonishment, at the station, there were 2,000 people to meet me. And they took me in procession to the place where I was to stay, and I had a little rest. I had something to eat. And then at 3 o'clock, there was a knocking on the door, which was rather unusual, and someone was shouting. So someone burst in and said, "Dr. Ambedkar is dead. We've just had the news from Delhi." So this threw all his followers into consternation, you can imagine, because only 6 weeks before, under his leadership, under his guidance, they'd all become Buddhist, and now he died. So there was a danger that the whole movement would collapse. So people came to where I was staying, and they wanted, well, there were about 5,000 people outside, and they wanted me to speak to them and, you know, console them. But that wasn't possible. There was no loudspeaker arrangement, so I sent them away and said, "I'll speak to you in the evening, but make arrangements for a loudspeaker, or a lot of loudspeakers." So we met in a place called the Kasturachand Park. I remember it very well, and we met late at night. We met at 7 o'clock at night, and it was dark. They hadn't had time to erect a proper platform. In fact, they were too upset. And I gave my talk standing up on a rickshaw. But there were loudspeakers. And as I stood there, I could see people coming from all directions of Nagpur. And they were coming in the darkness, in total silence. Now, you may or you may not realize that, but to get total silence in India is almost impossible. You know, when I give a talk, you all sit and you listen quietly. But in India, it's not like that. Well, you've got, to begin with, several thousand people, but quite often 50 ladies over there will start up a vigorous discussion. I'm sorry to say, it's usually the ladies, though. Start up a vigorous discussion, which will eventually drown the sound of your voice. And they will have to be requested to keep quiet. So that's what you get in India. It's very difficult to get complete silence. But on that occasion, we got it quite spontaneously. There was complete silence. People were coming in procession, in single file, from all directions, converging on this park, each carrying a single lighted candle. And they just gathered there. In India, there were 100,000 people. And I was the only one who could speak, because everybody else, as soon as he stood up to speak, started to say, "Dr. Ambedkar's leading followers," they just couldn't speak. They were so overcome by emotion. And as you know, Indians express their emotions much more freely than people do in England. They just come up to the microphone, but as soon as they try to say anything, they just burst into tears and they have to sit down. So the only one who didn't burst into tears, I mean, being English, was me. So I had to speak, and I spoke saying that Ambedkar had started this movement. He'd advised them to become converted to Buddhism, but that was the way it had to be. The movement had to continue even though Ambedkar was dead. So I got around Nagpur. I think in the course of 4 days, I gave 35 lectures in 35 different places, just trying to keep things going. And because of that, my connection with these ex-untouchables became very intimate indeed. And thereafter, every winter, I used to go down to the plains, especially to Maharashtra, especially to Nagpur, Pune, Bombay, those sort of places. And I used to give lectures, I used to hold classes and courses, trying to instill something of Buddhist teaching and Buddhist practice into them. Anyway, from what I've said, you can understand people's very, very strong feeling for Dr. Ambedkar. That is to say, his followers, strong feeling. The Mahars, the ex-untouchables, a strong feeling for him. No doubt, you understand, you realize that people in India have got a very strong feeling for Mahatma Gandhi. You could see that from the film. But the feeling that the ex-untouchables have for Ambedkar goes far beyond, as I've seen myself on numberless occasions, any feeling that anybody has for Mahatma Gandhi. But it's only his own followers who have this feeling, because they know what it's like to be an untouchable, so they're correspondingly grateful to him for having liberated them from the slavery of untouchability. Now, in 1964, I returned to England, and eventually, in 1967, I started the SWBO, as described in Subhuti's book, Buddhism for Today, which came out, incidentally, only the day before yesterday. So here we have the very first copies to be available. But though I was so busy with work in England and other parts of Europe, even in America and New Zealand, I didn't forget the excellent untouchables. In fact, I couldn't forget them. But for the time being, I felt I couldn't do very much. The situation in India had become very confused, especially politically confused. So I thought it wouldn't be a bad idea to give my work there a rest for a while and to concentrate on doing something in the West, especially in England. But I certainly didn't forget the ex-untouchables. And after a few years, some of my English pupils, they went to India, where they started up activities among the ex-untouchables, so that now we have a quite thriving movement among the ex-untouchables. We have ex-untouchable members, strange to say, of the Western Buddhist order, which in India is known as the Trilokya Bodhimahasangha Sahagana, which I won't try to translate. It means just very roughly Western Buddhist order, or World Buddhist order even. And we have not only things like lectures on Buddhism, and publications on Buddhism, lots and lots of publications, mainly in the Marathi language, but we've also started up various social activities, because they're still very, very depressed, economically and socially, and we're especially doing our best to set up a medical centre. And to that end, we've created an organisation known as Aid for India, which is a charitable trust concerned with raising money in England, in the West generally, in fact, to support our social work, not our religious work, but our social work, especially our medical work in India. And to date, mainly in the form of covenants, that trust has succeeded in raising some £2 million, which is being spent in India for that particular purpose. And I myself visit India, visit my ex-untouchable friends from time to time, and that's how I came to be there only last year on this 3-month lecture tour.